Maybe it looked like Kalumbrusha in Denmark and the northern parts of this and other industrial ecology parks in the world, where waste streams from one business become raw material inputs to another. We create closed loop systems for all of this, and nothing has to go to a landfill. Instead, we can try to use biomimicry and make sure that nothing goes to waste and instead can be upcycled, maybe recycled or downcycled if it has to be.
Welcome to Mindful Businesses, presented by Sarani, and I'm your host, Vidya Iyer. In our podcast, we bring to you brands which are mindful in their practices and processes. A mindful business adopts and employs sustainable social, economic, and environmental practices. Our podcast hopes to bring forth and share sustainable business practices to business owners and introduce green businesses to the consumers. Where do all these initiatives begin? It begins with education, formal, informal, or self-taught. To that end, we have with us Professor Shroff, Murin Chair of Global Competitiveness and Professor of Supply Chain Management at the Palumbo Donohue School of Business Management at Duke University. Welcome, Professor Shroff.
Well, thank you so much, Vidya. I'm thrilled to be here. I love talking to people about all that is happening in the world of sustainability, sharing that with my students who've also listened to your podcast. And I'm really excited to be able to figure out how to help people to integrate more sustainability into any enterprise.
Yeah. So how long have you been a faculty member teaching?
Yeah. I started at Boston College and came to Duquesne in this MBA in sustainability program in 2007. So 13 years now here.
And you've been teaching sustainability the whole time, or is it something fairly new?
Yeah, it's something I've been teaching the whole time. I mean, I've been doing sustainability research since I was in high school, but I came to this program as an endowed chair to purposely launch and develop a new program around sustainability in a business school.
So you were way before everybody talking about sustainability. You were ahead of the game.
I was trying to be. I got my first environmental research grant as a high school student, and even a publication from that before knowing exactly what I was going to do going off to college. And then college just kept me that much more interested in the topic.
But now, so many people are talking about sustainability. The businesses, the governments, everywhere that you go, people talk about sustainability, about recycling. What has caused this heightened awareness and what has caused the shift?
Ooh, there's so many things, right? We could layer into that. But I think so much more awareness now in terms of the environment around us. And that environment doesn't have to be environmental, but our social, geopolitical environment. Politics right now are putting more pressure on what is and what is not sustainable. I just fielded a phone call this previous weekend from a township that wanted to talk about how they incorporate more sustainability into their 10-year plan for development of businesses, for actually infrastructure, for things like transportation, for homes. So I think there's so much going on that's hard to keep track of it all. But for what I see with the students that I work with and the companies that I work with, it's really about waste reduction, saving costs, and now being able to tell new stories about how their products and services align with the United Nations 17 Sustainable Development Goals.
Can sustainability be taught?
Yeah, it really can. Oh my gosh. I was fortunate enough to do a sabbatical and be in Sweden, and I got to work with Carl-Henrik Robert, the founder of the Natural Step program, and Jörn Broman, who heads up a program there at BTH University here in Karlskrona. And in how we approach this, we use a framework for strategic sustainable development. And that framework tells us that there are 8 sustainability goals, like the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, but sustainability priorities. And if we violate any of those priorities, then we know that something is not sustainable. And we can think about that in terms of the things that we take out of the earth. If we take them out of the earth faster than they can be replenished by the earth, that's not sustainable. Sustainability principle number 2 is if we put things into the environment faster than the environment can actually absorb them, that's not sustainable. Number 3 is if we, you know, clear cut forests and cut things down faster than they can be grown, that is not sustainable. So if we have violations of these 1 through 8 sustainability principles, the first 3 are focused on the environment. 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 actually look at human health, access to information, and the human, social, political elements of this. I don't really want to say political as much, but it's access to information, it's partaking in decision-making, and getting away from misinformation, especially, which is a big problem that I think we have these days in terms of the amount of bad information that's out there in the world.
You said you spent some time in Sweden. If you had to compare the mindset of the Swedes to the Americans in terms of sustainability, in terms of being mindful in everyday life as a consumer and as a business owner, how would you compare? What are the couple of really stark contrasts or commonality?
Yeah, well, in the Nordic countries especially, they have much better built homes. So when you go by their homes in the winter, you can see plants in the windows, and you can actually look at these buildings and not realize that their walls may be 20 inches thick. And yet we build homes in the United States that are built out of 2x4s that are 4 inches thick plus a couple inches on top of that. So their homes are more in a passive house format of building, that they're tighter envelopes, lower energy consumption. They have better infrastructure for mass transit and can get around anywhere basically without a car. A vehicle isn't the primary mode of transportation. So transportation is easier. Living in a building is better in terms of lower energy consumption. And even just systems set up to take everything back in terms of separating all of our food waste and our recyclables. So we have compostables and recyclables that we're able to separate into. I think we had 7 to 9 different bins when we were there. And here in the States, it's hard to get a good cost structure for even recycling just some of the main things that we recycle. But our recycling rate is so low in the United States versus other countries that we just don't have a good business case for some of that recycling, because we also don't take into account how low the tipping fees are for us to just throw something away. I'm part of the world right now with about 5 landfills within 25 miles of the city, and we have some of the lowest tipping fees of any state, and it makes it that much harder for recyclers to then generate revenue from something when they have to compete against low costs for dumping.
So what percent of U.S. waste is actually recycled?
Oh, I'm going to give this a really low number, and I'm probably going to be wrong, so someone can correct me, but I want to think we're only recycling like 4%. Okay. And if we go to videos and things like this called The Story of Stuff, that's been out for almost, I think, 9 years now, 99% of everything we make goes to a landfill within 9 months.
And you said you had 7 or 9 separate bins to recycle, right, in Sweden?
Yeah, for recycling and composting, so that could take in food waste, yeah.
I remember when we started recycling here in West Lafayette, Indiana, we had like 3 or 4 bins, the glass, your regular paper, your plastic, and your newspaper. And then they said, oh, we should go to single stream recycling. I almost, even to date, I feel guilty to throw in the glass bottle along with the newspapers and my milk jugs.
Yeah, we've got single stream recycling here within the city of Pittsburgh. So that actually goes, we've had different facilities that take this in. We've got a facility in Neville Island that's 95% accurate in its sorting, and it's almost a fully automated plant. So that's why single stream can work pretty well in that location. But in just this last year or two, we've dialed back what we take because China cut off that waste supply that was going to them for recycling. Whether it was or was not recycled is still a question. So now we're down to pretty much just taking corrugated cardboard, newspaper, and some plastics. And then I take my glass, which they don't take anymore, so I take that separately to another place called Construction Junction, and I drop off at a site there after we accumulate enough to fill up about a half a trunk or so in the car. And then that's the way in which we get it done. But yeah, when we were in Sweden, I think we had 7 to 9 different bins we could choose from for all of our stuff to go into.
And I also read this article about the recycle sign with the number, the triangle.
Yeah.
It was a marketing plan by the plastic industry to give you the impression that this, which holds your meat or your yogurt tub, can be recycled. In fact, a lot of it is unrecyclable.
Right, it is bogus. It was something that basically the chemical industry came up with to greenwash this and come up with a marketing plan to let people think they could sort and recycle this stuff when most of the time it wasn't being sorted. So I think there's a really good article, or I should say a piece on that in NPR, that talks about their findings from that report. And I'm actually working with the city of Pittsburgh right now that has access to some of the same data and some of those other same reports. And we're trying to work on a closed-loop circular economy project for the city to help overcome some of those issues of the past and tie these into existing buildings and create hubs of places where we could better collect materials and find entrepreneurial startups that can take some of those materials and maybe create whole new products from them. We have one company in town called Thread that's been doing that and actually selling that fabric to shoe manufacturers and clothing manufacturers from recycled PET bottles.
You've authored several books and research papers on sustainable business practices. One of your latest book is Integrated Management. What is integrated management?
Yeah, integrated management is the realization that sustainability is already part of every business, but to what extent it's integrated is to be determined. So an integrated approach is one in which we actually look at sustainability and its use across business functions, and then out even into entire supply chains. And if we scale this, it's not just for the business environment, it also includes our buildings, our homes, and our cities, and the infrastructure that connects everything. So integrated management really is talking about how sustainability can be and already is an integrated piece of every part of a business in terms of the functions, accounting, finance, operations, marketing, new product development, even strategy, public affairs, human resources, and anything else we can think of.
You talked a little bit about what you are implementing in Pittsburgh. Could you go into a little bit more details, or is it too early?
No. These are parts of the live consulting projects I do with my teams of MBAs, and it's part of an experiential learning program that we've set up as our one-year MBA. Every semester for 1 year, students are in new teams and on new consulting projects, with sustainability being the focus. So 5 projects that I'm running right now, one of them involves the city. Pittsburgh is a great city in terms of a small kind of footprint, but a metropolitan city, lots of infrastructure that needs updating and things that we can actually move into this space. Amazon was, looking at us as one of those competing cities a while ago to try to move to, but we've already got over $1 billion invested here in autonomous vehicles and the auto industry.